Does a populace have informed consent when a ruling minority acts in secret to ignite a war, doing this to justify the existence of the minority's forces? History already has answered that question. Every society in the Consentiency today reflects the historical judgment that failure to provide full information for informed consent on such an issue represents an ultimate crime. From the Trial of Trials. Less than an hour after closing down at Gate 18, McKee and his escort arrived back at Jedrick's headquarters building. He led them to the heavily guarded side entrance with its express elevator, not wanting to pass Pecharki at this moment. Pecharki was an unnecessary distraction. He left the escort in the hallway with instructions to get food and rest, signaled for the elevator. The elevator door was opened by a small human female of about 15 years, who nodded him into the dim interior. McKee, his natural distrust of even the young on this planet well masked, nevertheless kept her under observation as he accepted the invitation. She was a gamin child with dirty face and hands, a torn gray single garment cut off at the knees. Her very existence as a Dosati survivor said she'd undoubtedly sold her body many times for scraps of food. He realized how much Dosati had influenced him when he found that he couldn't raise even the slightest feeling of censure at this knowledge. You did what the conditions around you demanded when those conditions were overwhelming. It was an ultimate question. This or death? And certainly, some of them chose death. Jedrick, he said. She worked her controls and he found himself presently in an unfamiliar hallway. Two familiar guards stood at a doorway down the hall, however. They betrayed not the slightest interest in him as he opened the door between them swiftly and strode through. It was a tiny anteroom, empty, but another door directly in front of him. He opened this with more confidence than he felt, entered a larger space full of projection room gloom with shadowed figures seated facing a holographic focus on his left. McKee identified Jedrick by her profile, slipped into a seat beside her. She kept her attention on the H-focus, where a projection of Broey stood looking out at something over their shoulders. McKee recognized the subtle slippage of computer simulation. That was not a flesh-and-blood Broey in the focus. Someone on the far side of the room stood up and crossed to sit beside another figure in the gloom. McKee recognized Gar as the man moved through one of the projection beams. McKee whispered to Jedrick, "Why simulation? He's beginning to do things I didn't anticipate." The suicide missions. McKee looked at the simulation, wondered why there was no sync sound. Ah, yes, they were lip-reading, and it was silent to reduce distractions, to amplify concentration. Yes, Jedrick was reworking the simulation model of Broey, which she carried in her head. She would also carry another model, even more accurate than the one of Broey, which would give her a certain lead time on the reactions of one George X. McKee. "Would you really have done it?" he asked. "Why do you distract me with such nonsense?" He considered. Yes, it was a good question. He already knew the answer. She would have done it, traded bodies with him, and escaped outside the God Wall as McKee. She might still do it, unless he could anticipate the mechanics of the transfer. By now, she knew about the 60-hour limit and would suspect its significance. Less than 60 hours. And the Dosati could make extremely complex projections from limited data. Witness this Broey simulation. The figure in the focus was talking to a fat human female who held a tube which McKee recognized as a communicator for field use. Jedrick spoke across the room to Gar. "She's still with him? Addicted." A two-sentence exchange, and it condensed an entire conversation about possible uses of that woman. McKee did not ask addicted to what. There were too many such substances on Dosati, each with peculiar characteristics, often involving odd monopolies with which everyone seemed familiar. This was a telltale gap in Erich's briefings. The monopolies, and their uses. As McKee absorbed the action in the focus, the reasons behind this session became more apparent. Broey was refusing to believe the report from Javi. And there was Javi in the focus. Jedrick favored McKee with one flickering glance as Javi's simulation appeared. Certainly. She factored McKee into her computations. McKee compressed his lips. She knew Javi would contaminate me. They couldn't say, "I love you" on this damned planet. Oh no. They had to create a special Dosati production number. Most of the data for this originated before the breakup, McKee said. It's useless. Rather than ask the computer to play pretty pictures for us, why don't we examine our own memories? Surely, somewhere in the combined experiences with Broey. A chuckle, somewhere to the left, stopped him. Too late, McKee saw that every seat in the room had an arm keyed to the simulations. They were doing precisely what he'd suggested, but in a more sophisticated way. The figures at the focus were being adjusted to the combined memories. There was such a keyed arm at McKee's right hand. He suddenly realized how tactless and lecturing he still must appear to these people. They didn't waste energy on unnecessary words. Anyone who did must be subnormal, poorly trained, or not from Dosati. Does he always state the obvious? Gar asked. McKee wondered if he'd blown his lieutenancy, lost the opportunity to explore the mystery of the Rim. But no, there wasn't time for that now. He'd have to penetrate the Rim another way. He's new, Jedrick said. New is not necessarily naive, as you should know. He has you doing it now, Gar said. Guess again. McKee put a hand to the simulation controls under his right hand, tested the keys. He had it in a moment. They were similar to such devices in the consentiency, an adaptation from the Demopole inputs, no doubt. Slowly he changed the Broey at the focus, heavier, the sagging jowls and node waddles of a breeding male Gowichan. McKee froze the image. Tentative? Gar asked. Jedrick answered for him. It's knowledge he brought here with him. She did something to her controls, stopped the projection, and raised the room lights. McKee noted that Tria was nowhere in the room. The Gowichan have sequestered their females somewhere, McKee said. That somewhere should not be difficult to locate. Send word to Tria that she must not mount her attack on Broey's corridor just yet. Why delay? Gar demanded. Broey will have all but evacuated the corridor by now, McKee said. Gar was angry and showing it. Not a single one of them has gone through that Rim gate. Not to the Rim, Jedrick said. It was clear to her now. McKee had supplied the leverage she needed. It was time now to employ him as she'd always intended. She glanced at McKee. We have unfinished business. Are you ready? He held his silence. How could he answer such a Dosati-weighted question? There were so many things left unspoken on this planet. Only the native-born could understand them all. McKee felt once more that he was a dull outsider, a child of dubious potential among normal adults. Jedrick arose, looked across at Gar. Send word to Tria to hold herself in readiness for another assignment. Tell Broey. Call him on an open line. We now have an excellent use for your fanatics. If only a few of your people fight through to that Gralus complex, it'll be enough, and Broey will know it. McKee noted that she spoke to Gar with a familiar teaching emphasis. It was the curiously weighted manner she'd once used with McKee, but no longer found necessary. His recognition of this amused her. Come along, McKee. We haven't much time.